May your word only be spoken, O God. May your word only be heard. Amen.
Amen.
One of almost the first things they make you do in seminary, you've only been there for a year, and it's a 3-year master's degree. At the end of the first year, they turn you loose in a hospital and expect you to be a decent chaplain. With almost no experience or training. And I did my first unit of clinical pastoral education, it's called, at Avera McKennan in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And I was assigned a general medical surgical floor and the dialysis unit. And Monday went all right, and Tuesday morning I walked into the dialysis unit and saw sitting in front of me in a dialysis chair with all his blood circulating through a machine behind me, my bishop. The person theoretically responsible for my formation, my ordination process, advising me, counseling me, certainly not someone to whom I was supposed to be giving pastoral care. I had known that he had kidney disease, I had known that he was on dialysis, but I had no idea that he was on dialysis in my hospital. And so I walked in and I stood in front of him. And I cannot tell you whether or not my mouth was open, but I can tell you that I was silent. And he said, "Hi, Kate, how are you doing?" And we went on for weeks with me incredibly uncomfortable on Tuesday and Thursday mornings, totally unsure what to do, and him sitting with me, counseling me, being fairly transparent about how much pain he was in and how hard this was for him, but doing it in an entirely pastorally appropriate way. And after about 4 weeks of that, I fled. I just couldn't. I couldn't do it. I don't know if I will ever have the skills to give pastoral support to someone in that position, but I couldn't do it then. And I went to my supervisor and I said, "You have to take me off the dialysis unit. I cannot do this." And we'd been talking about how it was weird to have my bishop receiving dialysis when I was supposed to be taking care of him, but not to that extent. I said, I just can't do it. And my supervisor, being a compassionate man himself, pulled me off the dialysis unit, and I went to a different long-term care unit. I was not comfortable sitting at the base of Creighton Robertson's cross. I wasn't ready. I wasn't prepared. I wasn't happy. I didn't expect to be there, and yet there I was. Christ the King Sunday often hits me in the same way. I do not want to be at the base of Jesus' cross on often the third Sunday in November. I'm not ready to be here. I don't really do well with Christ the King under the best of circumstances. I struggle with the stained glass window images of Christ throned in glory. I always have. And Christ on the cross is even harder. Give it to me during Holy Week when I've had time to prepare myself. Right? We've had Palm Sunday, we've heard the narrative once, we've done the Last Supper, here we are on Good Friday, Christ is dead, okay, I get it. I'm ready to be there. But Christ the King Sunday sneaks up on me. And then we're there. With a king who has not a crown, but a cross. And I don't really know what to do. I'm far more comfortable with the traditional power of the world, right? I have a good education, I have a professional job, I'm pretty good at strife. I know how to work hard. I know how to be rewarded for what I'm doing. I know how to achieve a goal. But to be asked to be unexpectedly compassionate, and I'm aware this is coming from someone who is compassionate professionally, and you all are looking at me going, but you've done this for us. It's hard. Right? When someone is asking me to be compassionate, I want to be the best at that too. Striving is easier in our culture. Traditional power is easier. This king on a cross, this is hard. We want a king who's not mocked by the soldiers. A king whose clothes are not taken from him. A king who wins. And yet we're given this. A king on a cross, hanging, Debbie Thomas writes, between derision and hurt. A king who doesn't try to get down from that cross, who doesn't try to find a way out, but is simply there. And where does that leave us who are supposed to follow? Debbie Thomas writes, I can't tell you what I see there because I don't know, but I can tell you what I don't see in that Christ on the cross and in his call to us. I see no path to glory that sidesteps humility, surrender, and sacrificial love. I see no permission to secure my prosperity at the expense of another's suffering. I see no tolerance for the belief that holy ends justify debased means. I see no evidence that truth-telling is optional. I see no kingdom that favors the contemptuous or the successful over the brokenhearted. So where does that leave us? It leaves us, she says, with a king that makes us uncomfortable. It leaves us in a place where we are called to compassion and love when we have no idea where that leads. A crown we can understand. But a cross, it's very hard. We all have those moments in our own lives when we realize that we are in a place we do not know, where the prize is not a crown. But we don't always know where we're going. The poet Jane Mead writes about standing at the base of the cross of her mother's dying, and she writes about love in this way. In animal darkness before the first day of the harvest, I walk up our vineyard's main avenue, thumbnail moon and the floodlight from the big barn, clanks and shouts. The squat stone structures of the homestead vanish. Its layers of ghosts flicker and go out. The black dog Leo follows me, almost invisible when I look back. He floats, a low-lying, uncomplaining black cloud. Day by day, I hum to the dog and the moon and the vineyard, I guess. Let me see you more clearly. Love is a ticket, whatever love is, and to where, I could not say. Christ the King shows us that love is not a ticket to a crown. Perhaps to a cross. We do not know where, but we know that love leads us to God. Amen.